Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Going to hit at the 35, penalty marker down. Jackson will try to field the wet football inside the 20. Still rolling free. There's a fight for it inside the 10, and it's been recovered by the Jaguars. It's been recovered by Jacksonville at the 7. Wingard is the man who had the hit. As Jackson trying to retreat to recover the rolling punt, we've mentioned it's damp on the field and it cost him.
Your NHL powered by the Tennessee Lottery.
No, you didn't.
Editing magic from our own. Oh. Freeman Tinkle back in the studio.
Literally, in 10 years of this show, this is the first time I think that Milli Vanilli has made it on.
There's never not a right time for some Milli Vanilli. You probably need to Google that, kids. It's a sad story. Sad story in Jacksonville for the Titans last night. Buck Rising is back in the studio. Brent and myself, we are in Dixon today, Greystone Country Club, with the Fight DMD Golf Tournament. Don Davenport is somewhere in rural Arkansas right now, I would assume. Buck, you survived in one piece with the trip, I guess. I noticed at one point there was water pouring into the press box, so they ultimately tried to kill you, it seems like.
Jacksonville, it would seem, boys. And happy Friday, by the way. Hope everybody's doing good. Jacksonville, it feels like every time, like no matter where you are, you're constantly having something like dripping on you. Like it's just a gross kind of place out there in the middle of nowhere. And yes, the press box was leaking on us at the end of the game. I think it got on Paul's laptop right as we were wrapping up, which always makes me giggle a little bit just to see the Chief squirm. But yeah, it was ugly from start to finish. From once we got in the stadium and realized that we couldn't even see anything half the time from the press box because they required windshield wipers in there to be able to see what was going on the field. Just a poor effort all around, and really one that I'm very happy to put out of memory as soon as humanly possible.
Well, Jacksonville basically is a pit of hell for those that haven't been there. It's ridiculous, that place. So, you know, the Titans performance went right along with that city. Do you blame more of it on Marcus or more of it on the offensive line?
Oh my God. I mean, it's hard not to criticize the protection. Like Marcus was poor throughout the course of the first half without question. And then once they started trailing, like it seemed to me he looked definitively more decisive and seemed to be. And, you know, you can say what you want about the Jags having the game in hand and then Marcus taking advantage of Delaney and opportunities that were had there late when they were chasing. But he looked better to me. He at least gave them a chance to be competitive there towards the end. The thing that I blame the most, though, is the coaching. And it's not because Adoree Jackson had the turnover there early on the punt return,
I
don't blame Adoree, because I went and talked to Adoree Jackson in the locker room after the game last night, and he goes, "Well, man, it's not like I'm trying to screw up." And then I realized, no, of course you're not trying to screw up. It's just that they continue to trot you out there.
What is this defiance? Yes.
Explain this to me, because I feel like I'm a crazy person every time I ask Mike Vrabel, at what point does Adoree Jackson become a detriment to you back there? And it's not Adoree's fault. It's on them for trying to, you know, let him rep it out or whatever coaching cliche you want to use. Enough of this. Make better decisions. Last night, I put the onus on the coaching staff, and it's the second week in a row.
It infinitely got better when Adam Humphries was back there. Now, because of another ridiculous penalty, they lost, you know, return yardage that he had gained. But it infinitely got better just catching the ball. You know, Buck, the fumble that buried them early on that put them behind 7-0, and really they never seemed to mentally get past that hurdle for the most part. But later on, he just lets another one bounce, and it gets 16 yards past him. And that whole field position thing that Mike talks about a whole lot, Well, you talk about field position, but you put him out there to return another punt, and he didn't even catch it.
It's the whole hidden yardage thing when it comes to special teams in that regard. Like, the thing that actually matters about special teams, other than the fact that you have Brett Kern, who is, again, a god amongst men on the football field, it's the coach's job, okay? The coach's job is to tilt the probabilities in their team's favor in the NFL. Across the league, like, talent-wise, you can debate on who's the better team. Is it the Titans? Is it the Texans? Is it the Colts? Whatever the case may be. Honestly, the talent level is pretty equal across professional football. It is incumbent upon the coach to be able to tilt the probabilities in your team's favor. And what I saw last night from Mike Vrabel was legitimately concerning to me. Because at the time when they hired him, I thought it was the right decision to make. Because everybody saw what Exotic Smash Mouth looked like. Everybody was down on it, and everybody was ready for a change. But sometimes it's just that people want change. And I'm not saying that Mike Vrabel's a bad coach. It's just that I've seen such poor decision-making as of late and over the course of a couple spots last year. And, of course, everybody talks about the bye week when they're sleeping in the facility on air mattresses and things of that nature to try and get things turned around. And they did. But I can't get over it where I'm sitting in the press box with Paul last night, and I look at him like, is Mike a good coach? Like, I don't understand what I'm watching here. It just seems so blatantly obvious to me.
Well, and that, Buck, would take people to the decision to not try to grab some points on the first drive of the second half. Look, it was still only 14-0 at that point. The defense really, other than a 7-yard one-play drive, which immediately was followed by a 6-play drive in which they scored, the defense had really settled into a groove. I mean, you've got to have some confidence in your offense, but when you say, no, it's 4th and 6 from the 11, we got to score a touchdown here, we probably aren't going to get back. To me, that tells me at that point, he had no confidence in his offense.
Oh, it reeked of desperation, didn't it? I mean, you were just...
Yes, absolutely.
We were watching that, and I'm just like, what the hell is he doing? And it's, to me, it speaks to a larger issue. Because I've had some time to think about this over the course of the day. I slept for about 3 hours last night in that miserable city that needs to sit, not actually sink into the sea, but, you know, it's close enough, in Jacksonville. I've had a long time today to think about all of the things that could be causing this issue. And to me, I look at Mike Vrabel, and it's more than just the in-game decision-making. Because he's had some spots, but on the whole, I think Mike Vrabel is a good coach. The question to me is he the right coach for what the Titans need to be better at? And I look around the league, and I look at Mike's background, and the more I think about it, the more that I think, well, of course, you look at Frank Reich across, and Frank Reich's a good coach. But what the Titans needed when they made the change from Mike Mularkey was better offensive efficiency, to be able to keep pace with teams in 2018 and now in 2019. And I just don't see Mike Vrabel being able to help on that side of the ball, and I see the offense struggle in that way, and that speaks to a larger thing when Marcus Mariota last night is telling us, well, you know, I need to learn, this isn't an exact quote, but like, just for example, I need to learn to throw the ball away, or I need to learn, or I need to get better about seeing Delanie Walker in that spot when the play is broken down around me and I'm scrambling, trying to extend the play, and then I just flat out miss Delanie. Like, why are you still learning? Who is teaching you? Why are you not better at this? And it comes back to the whole reason they made the change when they did from Mularkey to Vrabel. And I just don't know if Mike is the right guy to be able to help them in that particular aspect when I look at the rest of the coaches around the league.
HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Mickey Ryan and Brent Doherty live from the Fight DMD Golf Tournament in Dixon, Tennessee. Greystone Golf Club is where we are. If you want to know more about Fight DMD, you're going to hear from Terry Marlin today at 5:30. He'll tell his story, and I hope you'll want to help if you're interested and curious. In the meantime, fightdmd.com is where you should go. We were talking with Buck Rising on the other side. He joins us for another segment. Buck, you mentioned Vrabel mentioning urgency on that first drive of the second half. The Dope on Twitter asked, where was that sense of urgency on the last drive of the second half with 3 minutes to go and down 2 scores? That was very puzzling stuff.
It speaks to the larger, the game as a whole. And I saw many people, particularly Steve Weich over at the NFL Network, who I love, just tweeting funny gifs about the Titans no huddle and hurry up offense being in total slow motion. And just, again, it speaks the decision making on the whole last night and just the disorganization. They look to me like they've regressed. And it's so weird to say because I sat in here with you guys after Cleveland and we said, what a great job they've done. They were clearly prepared. They took advantage of a team that was that had all the hype swirling around them. They had 5 months, and they went in, they got it done, they knocked them in the mouth. And then you have the disappointing loss to the Colts. And then you have this where it just it progressively gets worse and worse, and I don't know. I understand that it's a difficult job. I just don't understand how it gets that significantly worse over the course of 3 weeks.
Let me ask you this. Obviously, they have bigger problems. More problems than just quarterback, right? But a lot of people are focusing in on that.
Brent, I had that tweet last night where Tannehill was putting his helmet on and Curtis next to me goes
into a frenzy.
Look, he's putting his helmet on. I'm like, okay, stand by. I'll put it out on Twitter and literally 17 retweets and 117 likes. Like people are sick.
Yeah. People are all over this. I've been all over Mariota as not the long-term big picture answer for like a year and a half. So this is not a surprise to me. But the idea that Mariota and Tannehill are very similar guys, like you put one, like if you replace Mariota with Tannehill, you're putting the same guy back there. My question is not that Ryan Tannehill is necessarily a more talented quarterback than Mariota, although you could debate that. Does he potentially fit this offense better, however? Does his pre-snap reads, is he better at that? Is he quicker with the decision, quicker with the release? I don't know the answer to those questions, but could he theoretically be as talented as Marcus, but maybe a better fit for this offense?
Marcus is the more talented player.
Yeah.
Tannehill is the more veteran option who has seen more and played in a division against tough defenses in New England and Buffalo and sometimes occasionally the New York Jets. I think because the thing is with Marcus, it's about him getting through his progressions. It's about him reading the defense. It's about him holding onto the ball. And those are things that I think Tannehill could potentially be the better player at. The thing that concerns me, though, is I just don't know. I don't know which of them could look like they are competent behind an offensive line that starts Jameel Douglas and Roger Saffold, who you're paying what north of $11 million a year to just get bullied up front. And Jacksonville is a really, really good defensive front. Calais Campbell has made much better offensive guards look just as bad as Jameel Douglas did last night. But Marcus was getting the absolute, and honestly, I would have preferred, if I'm a Titans fan, for them to put Tannehill in as that game wore on, because Marcus was continuing to get knocked around. I mean, 9 sacks. He's been sacked 17 times already. That's totally unacceptable. And like, Taylor Lewan doesn't fix this. Keith Carter, the offensive line coach, I remember looking at his bio when he came in with Vrabel's staff and being like, okay, that's an interesting background. Running backs coach in Atlanta. I understand that you are involved with the offensive game planning and the run game, and so you have some knowledge, one would assume, some working knowledge of offensive line. But what exactly makes you qualified to be an offensive line coach? And yes, that unit has gotten progressively worse since they broke it up, or since they had one of the best offensive lines in the league when Conklin was an All-Pro, and Lewan the first time around with the Pro Bowl, and Ben Jones and Quentin Spain and Josh Klein didn't look all incompetent. But the coaching, again, they're not getting better. Like, it doesn't matter that they've had a talent influx. One would assume with Saffold, he doesn't make them better. And I want to understand why. Because Tom Brady makes schlub offensive linemen look great all the time. He got Trent Brown paid and more money than any offensive lineman in NFL history right after Taylor Lewan did it. And who among us had heard of Trent Brown before last year? I don't understand why the offensive line is such an anchor around their neck, and it has consistently been one since the preseason. That's the one time where you can pick apart the offensive line play, because you're actually seeing it. And Roger Saffold and Jameel Douglas and Kevin Pomfield, even when he was in there, are not viable options.
Buck Rising, our guest, at Buck Rising on Twitter with A to Z Sports. So I mean, in the interim, you at least got one more week without Taylor Lewan. Buck, can you play right guard? I mean, what are you going to do in Atlanta?
If I eat any more press box food, Mickey, I might be able to.
Eat up.
Just shoveling my face full of bad chicken parm last night in Jacksonville because I was hate eating at that
chicken
point.
Parm is an unexpected play for Jacksonville, yeah. Right?
I mean,
you're by the water. Wouldn't you have some sort of fish dish?
Chicken of the sea.
Would you want fish in a leaking press box in the middle of Jacksonville, Florida? I would prefer the chicken parm. In fact,
like it's airplane.
If you blacken the crap out of it, maybe.
Well, that was the fried. I believe it was ravioli bits that were blackened. At halftime, that was the snack. It was just a whole disaster.
We talked about the disaster that is the offensive front. Mm. On the other side, on the defensive front, they didn't get a whole lot of pressure. Minshew, last time I checked, I mean, his jersey may have been a little bit wet from the rain, but he never got sacked, Buck. On the other side, not a lot of push from the Titans.
No, not at all. And this is something that people have been going back and forth with me on Twitter all day about. Why isn't Cam Wake playing more snaps? Why is it down from 24 in Cleveland to 17 against Indianapolis to 14 now? And that's because people forget Cam Wake is not supposed to start for the Tennessee Titans. It doesn't matter how much money he's getting paid. Cam Wake is 37. He is a third down situational rusher, and he is going to be great in those spots when you use him correctly. It's about the rest of the guys around him that are unable to produce anything. I mean, Reggie Gilbert got like 8 snaps. Nobody expected him to be any kind of contributor. That's not his MO. He is an edge setter. He is somebody that is there to help defend the run. And they did that well until, you know, the end, and Fournette had the 69-yard run. Nice. But I look at Kamale Correa, who gets way more snaps than he absolutely should based on the amount that he's able to contribute. And yes, he got wronged last night with that roughing the passer call. But Sharif Finch is fine. He's a piece. He is not somebody who's going to be able to start. Kamale Correa is a good energy player. He literally is able to generate no pressure. Harold Landry has moments where he's able to affect the quarterback, and he spends a lot of time around their legs, even if it doesn't necessarily show up in the box score. That's a bright spot. But it's about the rest of the guys that you have around him, and you can't expect Cam Wake to shoulder the burden of starting opposite Harold Landry if you want that guy to be used as you plan to over the course of a 16-game season.
And that's another one of those things. Dean Pease, we had a field day with this on the pregame show yesterday. Gosh, just a rookie quarterback, 6th-round pick against the Dean Pease.
He's blood in the water,
that
baby.
Guy. I mean, he had a couple passes he threw early, but you know, just to get rid of it. But they didn't seem to confuse him much. And if a play looked like it wasn't going to get anything, he either immediately threw it, Buck, or that rascal just ran 3 or 4 yards and kept the chains moving. I mean, it was an impressive performance by him. I don't want to take anything away from what Minshew did. You know, while we talk about the futility of the Titans defense, that guy did his own thing, and he looked good.
I mean, the receivers for Jacksonville look good against the Titans secondary. That's not something that I was totally prepared for. But yeah, Gardner Minshew, he was the one bright spot out of all of that. If you're just a football fan, and I know Titans fans have no interest in hearing that today, but Gardner Minshew was a fun watch last night, even as the game on the whole was a bit of a slog. I mean, he was out there legitimately having fun playing football in the rain against a divisional opponent. It did not look anything as close to fun for the Tennessee Titans yesterday.
Yeah, and he had 2 touchdown passes. Should have had a third, a beautiful pass in the end zone dropped. I thought he managed the game very well. I thought he got rid of the football quickly and made good decisions. Definitely true. So, I mean, that's one thing. A 6th-round rookie quarterback managed the game better than a 5th-year number 2 overall pick. Now, having said that, of course, the offensive line and the ineptitude there for the Titans affected a lot of that. But it's interesting when you look at Marcus Mariota's numbers in totality for the game, 23 of 40, 304 yards. But then when you dive in a little bit, that last drive, that meant absolutely nothing. 7 of 10 for 81. So outside of that, 16 of 30, 223. And defensively, Buck, they're really good defensively. And they can get a lot better because they're giving up the big play, right? I mean, they had 4 plays last night that totaled like 160 yards, something like that. And then the the rest of the way, 50 plays for about the same number. So they gave up the big run against Indy late. They gave up the big run against Jacksonville late. They've got to shore that up.
Corners are going to get beat. But, like, the most telling thing with this defense and with this team as a whole is the runs that they give up at the end of these games. It really just seems to be the nail in the coffin, whether it's Jordan Wilkins against the Colts on Sunday or Fournette at the end of the game last night. The defense, they cannot sustain over the, I mean, not that it's their fault, but they cannot sustain the burden of carrying the team the entire time, especially on a short week the way that they did. And those runs, to me, are emblematic of that. It's just like the final break in the dam. Like, over the course of the Titans' struggles, they labor up and down the field on offense. They don't take points where they absolutely should have needed the points, and then the defense is forced to trot back out there and go through the motions again. And for the most part, hold up. But when you look at the they're fine on defense. I'm not worried about their defense. Corners, like I said, they're going to get beat, and there's good receivers all over the NFL. It's why they cannot be any kind of consistent or maintain any kind of flow or seemingly offensive game plan outside of what they did with Cleveland with 5 months to prepare. That is the larger issue for me.
Well, Buck, we appreciate the sermon today. If you want to hear more from Buck Rising, stay tuned to A to Z Sports and give people your info, Buck, so they can more easily find you and interact with you. Just enjoy the essence that is Buck Rising.
Come get these Twitter hands at Buck Rising on Instagram at Buck_Rising. 615 Sessions Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe. A to Z Sports Primetime, Sunday to Thursday night, 8 p.m.